This is Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports.
How you doing? This is indeed Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports, brought to you by the I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network and Mile High Radio in Denver. Solly and Jeff coming to you from the FedEx Studios.
Hi-yo.
We will have the opinions of Steve and Third Mike Dan, the other two regular show hosts on this fine radio program.
And it'll take about 10 seconds.
Well, for some of Danny's thoughts anyway. Steve, he's got a little more involved.
Good.
With his thoughts on the sports world.
Good.
We're going to talk about what's going on. We got a couple notes and some interesting trade rumors from Major League Baseball, at least that Steve has heard.
Have you heard a new candidate for the Yankees managerial position?
Not yet, but Steve may have a theory on that.
But did he say who that person might be?
Like I said, he may have a theory on that. We'll get to that later on.
Can I tell you who it is now?
You want to surprise me? Go ahead.
He's the third base coach of the LA Dodgers.
Okay.
And he used to play for the Mets.
I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on
He was one of the better utility persons not named Joe McEwing.
That would have been my guess. My next guess is probably Jose Valentin.
No.
Valentin was a second baseman.
Yes, he was a second baseman, but you're incorrect.
Then who am I drawing a blank on?
Woodward.
Oh my God, Chris Woodward. Wow.
Yes. He's on the list now of nominations to be the new Yankees manager.
And Steve has not listed Chris Woodward as a possible nominee.
I know one of them has been floating around since his retirement, though.
Yeah, I know. I've heard that rumor, too.
Yes. Carlos Beltran.
I thought we were going to say baseball talk for later, since the opening music is after all the NFL.
It is, but you know what? We're in the flow right now.
Yeah, why
baseball.
Not? So, yeah, we'll get their thoughts on Yankee managers.
I mean, yeah, we're playing this NFL music because it's the NFL season. Duh.
Yeah, why not?
But
we incorporate everything here on this radio show, yeah, the hour that we have.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, in the past years, you know, we used to have two episodes. Unfortunately, we don't have that much time now.
Because we're
getting older,
friends.
And our other co-hosts have other career paths and interests, so it's just, yeah, you know, down
it's
to
just
one
easier.
Hour. Yeah.
It's also easier on you and me because you've got other career interests that time constrain
you,
and same thing
so
with
anyways,
me.
So anyways, Carlos Beltran announced his retirement from MLB Baseball.
After 20 years in the game.
Yes, and he is rumored. I don't say rumored, but it seems like he would be a great fit to be the Yankees' new manager.
I could see. Well,
a lot of, from what I've heard, you know, from various, like, new
sources.
Sources, but I was trying to say Michael Kay.
Yeah.
You know, from him being around the Yankees, he's well-respected by almost every single player. He's a natural leader.
And he's got a good head on his shoulders for baseball.
For goodness sakes, he helped Didi Gregorius become a great player.
Yeah.
A great hitter.
He did. And Didi's.
He knows the players in the Yankees system right now because he's been with the Yankees. I know his last season he wasn't with the Yankees.
He was with Houston and won a title to close out his career.
Good for him. But still, like he understands the Yankee culture, he understands the Yankee way, and he has a great baseball mind.
Indeed he does. You don't get to spend 20 years playing Major League Baseball if you don't have a great baseball mind and athletic ability.
And he has respect in the lock by almost every single player that he's come across.
Yep, and since we're on the topic, I'll give Steve's thoughts now on the Yankees' managerial moves, if you will. So, direct quote from Steve, and for the Yankees, do they have any idea who their manager is going to be? I seem to hear a different name every day. Jerry Harrison Jr., A-Rod, Aaron Boone, now Carlos Beltran is even a possibility. If the Yankees didn't have any idea on who they would want as a new manager, then why fire Girardi? The only reason to fire a manager and not have a replacement in mind is if he did a horrible job. Girardi had a very young Yankees team that was just one win away from the World Series in a rebuilding year. Makes no sense to me, but until proven otherwise, I can't question Cashman, but it Excuse me, but it just looks really strange right now. Good news for Yankee fans is the only way a manager could screw this great young team up is if they hire Ben McAdoo. Is if they hire the Ben McAdoo of baseball managers. More on him later. The Yankees' future is still extremely bright, no matter who the manager is. That I agree with.
So who's the Ben McAdoo of MLB
no,
managers?
No, he's just saying the only way they could screw this up anymore is if they find somebody who's the equivalent of Ben McAdoo.
But is there any actual manager that could be?
Not that I know of. Not as far as Major League Baseball is concerned.
Because usually that person's fired midway through the season to even make it worse.
Exactly. So, but the thing with Yankees management is, when I look at it, Woodward would be a good fit. I can't see A-Rod managing.
How would he be a good fit, Woodward?
Well, he's already got managerial. He's already got experience coaching at the Major League Baseball level, does he not?
Yeah, so you have a lot of first base coaches, third base coaches, batting coaches, pitching coaches, and you could say they're all qualified then, so what makes him different?
The Mets just did hire Mickey Callaway, an ex-pitching coach, to manage their ball
club. So what makes Chris Woodward different then?
I could be along the same lines as Beltran. You know, he understands the game of baseball quite well.
So does every manager. Okay, so what does he bring?
Well, he's got the mindset of how to be able to prepare and get guys ready to play baseball every day.
So is everyone else.
Yeah. So what separates him? I don't know.
Exactly. So why?
He knows New York baseball. He knows how to be able to handle New York media, which Girardi did too, apparently.
I guess that could be an intangible. I still don't get why they've got rid of Cashman got rid of Girardi.
It was a mutual thing.
It wasn't really that mutual to begin with.
And it's like as those words were coming out of my mouth, I realized, wait a minute, I don't think Girardi exactly wanted to leave right away. I think Girardi was quite content here.
Yeah,
I think it partially was the Yankees just couldn't. Part of it, I think, was they couldn't come to a contract agreement with him. And part of it was they just felt that he'd only taken this team so far.
Are you trying to sound like you're intelligent because you have a microphone in front of you?
Yeah, I know. Wait. Run that by me again? Why do you say... Explain that. Explain that last comment.
Because it seems like that the whole Cashman thing, how do you get rid of a manager that has done so much, and as we talked about in previous episodes, of being one of the most winningest general manager during his career as a Yankee manager.
Wait, winningest general manager as his career as Yankee manager?
Yeah, so sorry. I was getting wired up.
All right.
The most winningest manager.
One of the most winning managers in Yankees history.
Joe Girardi's tenure.
Yeah.
Behind Joe Maddon.
Yeah.
All right? And how do you get one win away from a World Series and think, time to move on. We need a new voice. He's not getting the people in the
dugout. He's not getting the players.
Yep, he's not doing well with them.
He
even said that, you know, they're not I don't want to say not respecting him, but it's like he's not getting to the players.
He's not responding to him.
Bull.
He got you to within one win of a World Series. How do you let the guy go? I'd be like, you know what? Here's what we do. All right, let's say I'm Brian Cashman, right? Girardi, you just got us within one win of a World Series with a team that wasn't supposed to do a whole hell of a lot this year.
Exactly. How is that a bad manager?
I'd be looking at Girardi right now and going, there's a blank check. What do you want for money and for a contract?
Unfortunately, that doesn't work because it's all analytics-driven.
Which I've vented about for the longest time. I think it's complete bullcrap.
Yep.
I hate it.
It seems like they wanted a new – or Cashman just wants a new manager – just to be a massager of the players and not even worry about, you know, putting who there and there. It seems like that part of the managerial role is being decided by the analytics team and general manager.
Well, then to a degree.
So it's like, why even bother having a manager?
Well, then again.
You're just going to have a public dugout relations coach instead of a manager.
Yeah, which, again, you have to be a. And I've argued this for the longest time. Statistics can only tell you so much. There is a certain thing called the eye test. Being able to actually watch baseball day in and day out. Yeah, the box score could say the guy went 3-for-4 last night with two singles and a double. But these
analytics are like high advanced, you know.
No, I know, but the argument I'm trying to make is that, yeah, the two singles could have been seeing eye singles and they just barely got under the glove of the infielders. And the double could have been a lucky double based on purely the eye test. So, like I said, yes, analytics is cool to a certain degree, and it does make stats and box scores look a lot sexier, but at the same time, the eye test plays a much larger role in that,
it should be
factored in more.
I mean, analytics should just be a guideline, not a way of life.
Exactly. Case in point, look at Game 4 of the World Series. The reaction of Rich Hill when he got taken out in Game 4, he was pissed.
Exactly.
And he did not want to come out of that game. But Dave Roberts went to the analytics rule, and that Rich Hill got pounded third time through the batting order, which is why he took him out in the fourth inning at only 66 pitches, which to me is a low pitch count. If you're up to 66 pitches in the second inning, okay, you deserve to get pulled for that. But if you're at 66 pitches through four and you look like you still have plenty left in the tank, get your ass back out on that mound. You're pitching until you get clobbered or your arm falls off, one of the two.
Well, you can't say clobbered, but it seems like you're on the verge of being destroyed.
Yeah, but if you're getting knocked around or your arm's going to fall off, then I'll take you out.
Exactly.
Otherwise, get your ass out on that mound and pitch.
Yeah, it's just the mindset now. It's just too analytics-driven.
It's the money ball era. That's the way to look at it right now, unfortunately.
But, you know, other things are going on, though, in the MLB. You know, the general manager's meeting has been going on. Have you been following that?
Not all that closely, honestly. I know there's a couple of things that have been coming up, but I haven't really been...
Like what?
Well, honestly, I haven't really been able to pay attention to it because I've been busy doing other things that have occupied my time.
Yeah, so...
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So I know I heard one rumor, though, about Jeter possibly, since he's now the owner of the Marlins,
about
trading Giancarlo Stanton
I've heard about
to
that.
The Red Sox.
I've heard a couple of different teams. I didn't realize Boston was the front runner.
Yes.
But I heard somebody calling the sports radio here in New York the other day and vehemently bashed Derek Jeter for trading Giancarlo Stanton, who is quite arguably, when he's healthy, one of the greatest power hitters, not only of this lifetime, but possibly ever. I wouldn't go so far to say it's possibly ever yet, but he's definitely one of the greatest power hitters of this generation, to the Red Sox, and it's un-Yankee. Like, I'm like, as soon as I heard that, first thought that run through my head is, why the hell would Jeter do that? I mean, I can understand Jeter doing that from a business perspective as owner of the Marlins to be able to get the best possible package of players in return for Stanton to make his Marlins club better. That's why I think Stanton would do it, is because I think Boston has a need in right field. And with the way Fenway Park is set up, it's a hitter-friendly park, I think. And it would benefit Giancarlo Stanton greatly being able to play in a hitter's park like Fenway. And also, I think the Marlins are so tied up contractually with that ginormous contract that they gave him a couple of years ago. The only way I could see the Marlins even remotely moving him is if some team has the cap space and the willingness to be able to take on the bulk of that contract. Because if they don't take on the bulk of that contract, I don't see Giancarlo Stanton getting moved anywhere.
I like how you hear some of the Yankees fans going, why would he do this against trade to the Red Sox? It's like he's losing his Yankee pride or Yankee alignment and stuff like that.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with
I know. It's a silly fan thing that goes in their heads. Like,
it's fan reaction first.
Yeah, fan reaction. Like, he's a lifetime Yankee. How could he do this to Yankees by not giving the Yankees the best players? He's the owner
of the Marlins.
He does not work for the Yankees. He's not like a double agent saying, no. Oh, this is just a Yankee development camp that's acting as a Major League Baseball team.
I'm like, but he's a Yankee great. He should automatically trade the best players to the Yankees. Screw that.
Yeah, he wants to beat the Yankees.
Exactly. He wants a world championship to come to Miami like every other Marlins fan and anybody else who's invested in
that
team. Don't give me that bullcrap that this is a Yankee move. It's a Marlins move, and it's a business perspective made by, hello, a Major League Baseball owner.
Yep.
So he's doing this, and what is
Yankee fans, have fun cursing out Jeter like the rest of the league has been for the past 20 years.
Yeah, and me personally, I don't give a crap. I really don't. If it's not affecting the Mets, who cares? That's the way I look at it. You know, you can hate about it all you want, Yankee fans, but this is not a Yankee-related move. It's Derek Jeter as owner of the Marlins. End of discussion. You want to complain about it? I'll call a wambulance for you. Go cry me a river. That's the way I look at it. I mean, I'm just sick of Yankee fans bitching about stuff that has nothing to do with them.
Just,
or their baseball team.
Yeah, it happens. I mean,
I know, but it's annoying. Oh, don't get me wrong. Mets fans, you know, I've heard other Mets fans bitch about stuff too, so every fan base has them.
Yeah, can't do anything about it.
Yeah, although there have been rumors.
That's why they're fans. They're fanaticals.
Yep. There also have been rumors, and Steve brought this to my attention with his rant on the Mets, that the Mets are also in trade markets for second baseman. So here's Steve's thoughts on the Mets. He goes, the Mets have been in the news again because it looks as if they'll make a trade for a second baseman soon, which they desperately need. D. Gordon's name has been mentioned as a player that they should get, but he's going to be expensive because I think D. Gordon does have a high salary cap hit this year. So, say hello to the cheaper second option of Jason Kipnis, which I wouldn't mind. Kipnis is a good ballplayer. At least I have hope. As a Met fan, all you can root for is to get the second option. If he's too expensive, then just quit. Look for the Mets to get a lot of Indians and Royals players in the offseason because of their new manager, Mickey Callaway, and pitching coach Dave Eland, who was just announced today. Now, any fan should be excited because of that. I mean, the Royals have won a World Series recently and have been to two. And although the Indians have choked in two straight seasons, they've at least made it to the playoffs both seasons and to a World Series in one of them. Why should you hold your excitement as a Met fan is because I did not say that they could get either of those teams good players. If you think we are getting Moustakas, Hosmer, or somehow Lindor, you are sadly mistaken. Look for the Mets to add players like Kipnis, Jason Vargas, and players of lower talent than them. I would not be shocked if those are the other two top-end player talent acquisitions this offseason, as sad as that sounds. And the Mets have already said, and those were Steve's thoughts on the Mets, with mine thrown in, but as sad as this is going to sound, the Mets aren't going to go out and make too many big-name player moves this offseason, because they've already said, Sandy Alderson and the rest of management have gone on to say they want to get the salary cap under $150 million, and they've already got a lot of money tied up in Yoenis Cespedes. So do you really see them going out after big-name free agents like Mike Moustakas? I don't see it. Plus, you also have to remember that in the next couple of years, they have to worry about getting that superb pitching staff locked up to long-term contracts. I believe Jacob deGrom's contract is due up at the end of next year. I think Noah Syndergaard's is 2 years away. Matt Harvey, I know, is coming up, but I don't think a lot of Met fans like myself are going to lose sleep over losing Matt Harvey. Who else am I missing? With Zach Wheeler, due up for extension soon if he can get healthy. With Steven Matz due up for extension soon, if he can stay healthy, the Mets have to worry about their pitching staff along with filling holes in, let's see, center field, third base, second base, first base, catcher. There's a lot of holes that the Mets need to fill aside from dealing with locking up the pitching staff. Are they going to be able to go out and get superb top-end talent? Probably not. But are they going to get decent serviceable players? Yeah, I wouldn't put it past the Mets to be able to do that, honestly. And why not, right?
Well, here's the thing, though.
Okay.
Why would that be if I'm reading right now that the Mets are interested in trying to bring in one of the rising stars in Japan baseball?
And that gentleman's name would be what?
Shohei Ohtani.
Okay.
And he is considered right now to be Japanese Babe Ruth.
Ruth. That's what I thought. That's why that name is
familiar. And they're trying to compete with the Red Sox, Yankees, and Dodgers.
Three of the teams with the highest payrolls in baseball.
Yes.
I think you have to pay a certain amount of money to be able to even get into talks with them. I know that happened with Daisuke when Daisuke Matsuzaka first came over to the States.
A right-handed pitcher who is a threat as a left-handed hitting outfielder.
And that's saying something. But he's got to be able to pick a position. Is he going to pitch or is he going to play the outfield? Because the Mets could use the center field help. Honestly.
I would rather have him as an outfielder, not a pitcher, but who the hell knows, but maybe just focusing on that would be only what the Mets would do.
Yeah, and it's going to leave them still with glaring holes at second, catcher, first.
Yeah.
It's still going to leave the Mets with problems.
But still, it's interesting to see the Mets being actually interested in something like this to begin with.
I don't know. Hey, the fact that
throwing their hats in the ring for a possible stud of a player.
Why not go for it? If you've got the means, why not? I mean, I know it's going to cost you, and you're going to deal with that whole $150 million salary limit. But at the same time, again, looking at this from a fan perspective, if you're going to try to get the payroll under $150 million, here's a bad idea. Lower your ticket prices, lower price of parking, lower concession stands, lower all that stuff at Citi Field to make it a little more affordable, depending on the talent level you have put on the field.
Possible.
Yeah, but again, it depends on what's on the field. If the talent level's good enough to possibly get us a division title and make a strong push for a World Series, then your ticket prices are justified. Or the Yankees could have justifiable ticket prices because they were within a game of the World Series this past season.
Yep.
The Mets can't do that because they completely dive-bombed and finished 22 games under 500.
Good number.
Yeah.
Not really.
No.
Especially when you're under.
Yeah, 70 and 92. Is that bad? It's not good.
No, not good at all.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was there for one of them. It was a blowout loss to the Reds, so Labor Day weekend.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I know. That's why I've always said it pains me to root for the three teams I root for, the Mets, the Jets, and the Islanders. I'm perennially screwed year-round.
Yeah, well, it seems like, though, with the Jets, it seems that reality is slowly sinking in, that they are not going to be even close to becoming a playoff contender at all, just a playoff pretender, as they couldn't show up at all against their game.
And it was in their game against Tampa Bay.
Not good.
And what made that even more surprising is the fact that Tampa's star receiver Mike Evans was suspended one game for a fight he got into the previous week. And star quarterback Jameis Winston is going to miss a couple of weeks due to a shoulder injury in his throwing arm. So the Bucs had to go with former Jets quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick under center. And it turned into a complete, total, and utter crap fest.
It was just a boring game.
It was a bad football game. It ended 15-10 for Tampa. So we all got that wrong in Pigskin Picks. We'll talk about that later on. Stat lines for the two quarterbacks. Fitzpatrick, 17 of 34, 187, a touchdown and a pick.
Whoa.
Josh McCown, 23 of 39, 262, a touchdown and a pick.
Whoa, and that touchdown was like late in the fourth quarter.
It was near the end of the game. It was to Robbie Anderson to cut the lead to 5. But it was a flat-out, ugly, nasty, disgusting football game to watch.
Yep.
It was flat-out horrible football. And when you look at some of the other teams, and we've actually had good games, to a degree we've had good football games. We had
Even though the ratings are still going down?
Yeah, I know. That's another argument entirely. And I do have something else that might be ratings-related, but that's later on. It has to do with GQ Magazine. It's all connected, trust me.
You like to look at those men outfits, huh?
Well, it's that and the cover boy for Citizen of the Year, but more on that later.
Go on.
So, yeah, horrible game for the Jets. Granted, I didn't have the Jets. I had the Jets luck if they were lucky to win 3 games all season.
So that already beat your expectations.
Yes, they've already beaten my expectations. And up until now, the Jets had been able to hang in most of the games. They hung in against the Patriots, which was shocking in and of itself. They hung in against Atlanta, where Atlanta could have easily run them over, but the Falcons have been playing bad football, and it was in a bad weather game. This was the first time since, I think, week 2 against the Raiders, where the Jets looked like the Jets you would have expected them to be, and that's a bad football team.
Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing someone saying that he really doesn't care about how Todd Bowles is doing, like he hasn't earned that extension or whatever, because he hasn't shown at all when it really matters. Does he get his players ready to win when the pressure's on the line, when you're trying to vie for a playoff spot, when you're in that position to try to make to get into the playoffs? Todd Bowles really hasn't done a lot to show that.
Well,
and this game was an important game for the Jets to even try to take that leap, and they basically laid a dud.
And that's being nice.
Yes. So, even though Todd Bowles has done more than expected with this roster, he still hasn't shown that he can coach a team to the ultimate victory.
Well, again, this would have gotten them back to 500 going into the bye, because they were 4-5 going into this week. Now they sit 4-6. They're on the bye week, and it doesn't get any easier from here for the Jets, because coming out of the bye, they got Thanksgiving, the weekend after Thanksgiving. It's home to Cam Newton and the Panthers. Then it's host Kansas City early December, go to Denver, to New Orleans, host the Chargers, and to New England to end the season. I see one win out of that batch. If they're lucky, maybe two. The only other team I could see them possibly beating.
That was that Chargers game.
What?
The Chargers game.
Chargers game's the one win I could see, for sure. The only other one that's even a remote question, and that's because they've been as bad as they have this year and Jekyll and Hyde-ish, is Denver. Even though Denver's got one of the top defenses still in the NFL, that's the only other one I could see possibly, you know, being a reality and a win for the Jets. Because if you look at everybody else, Carolina's 6-3. They're fighting it out for a playoff spot with the 7-2, and now on a 7-game winning streak, New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, who saw that one coming?
Who the Jets play on December 17th at 1 o'clock in New Orleans. And this is for a Saints team that started the year off 0-2. They've won 7 straight. Then you still have to
deal
with
them.
You also have Kansas City in there as well, and the Chiefs are always a tough team to beat. And then you have, to close out the season, your arch rival in the division, who in all likelihood will win the division again this year, the New England Patriots.
Always amazing. They start off the first 4 weeks just mediocre, and then they just build and build and build to be now 7-2. It's like, of course the Patriots would do that. But now is the time in the NFL season, though, that you actually do see where the best teams and the worst teams are. There's no more real middle ground, even though there's still a lot of poor football being played at this time.
Yes, there is. And Steve does have his thoughts on the Jets. I don't know if you want to read Danny's thoughts on that, because I know you have those.
He basically doesn't say anything.
All right, but as Steve is concerned, here's his thoughts on the Jets. The Jets have missed a huge opportunity against the Buccaneers this week. Unbelievably, if they would have won, they would have been at 500 going into the bye with an actual chance to make a push for a wild card spot. Now that dream for them is over. Although they won't, it is possibly best for the Jets to tank at this point. A 4-win season would still give them a nice draft pick. Unfortunately, the Jets will finish 6-10 or 7-9 and screw themselves like usual. They'll probably end up finishing 6-10 at best. 6-10, maybe 5-11, like they did last year.
Yep, but a better 5-11 if you think about it.
Yeah, it's better 5-11 this year than you would have expected.
Yes. And I know we've talked about, like, how great the Jets have been and stuff, but this loss, is it a much bigger loss this week compared to what the Giants experienced over the weekend when they lost to the winless San Francisco 49ers?
Which I never thought I'd ever hear, but the Giants actually lost to San Francisco 31-21, and this despite the best efforts of Sterling Shepard, who finished the day with 11 catches for 142 yards. He was targeted 13 times. Eli finished today going 28 of 37 for 273 and 2 touchdowns. And Orleans Darkwa had 70 yards rushing on 14 carries. But they were outplayed by Carlos Hyde, who had 98 yards on the ground. C.J. Breezehead, who was a starter for the 49ers, went 19 of 25, 288 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. And from what I didn't watch any of the Giant game, unfortunately. I was busy Sunday night. I was out at a concert. So I missed the Giants game, but I saw the highlights. The Giants defense, much like they did against the Rams, looked like they were allergic to tackling people, which cannot happen in the NFL. Especially going up against a team that had gone 0-9 to this point. New York Giants, you should be flat out embarrassed of yourselves for what you just did.
Well, that's a problem, is that they just gave up. How can they be embarrassed when they quit?
Basically, they're going to cost Ben McAdoo's job.
And basically, those players that are quitting are really costing themselves a nice new contract when they get cut.
Pretty much.
Because they're basically showing that when the going gets tough,
they don't get going.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is amazing.
There's nothing to be rallied, nothing to, you know, you're a professional football player. You should play like a professional football player as this professional football season is going on. And you're just not doing anything to deserve to continue to play in this professional league.
Which is mind-numbing, and when you really think about it, Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator for the Giants, should be embarrassed.
Well, he said he's been embarrassed.
Good, because you go from having one of the better defenses in the NFL last year. I believe they finished in the top 10 in every major defensive category. They finished in the top 10. If not, I'll go so far as to say they were a top 5 defense. You go from that to what can now be compared to, honestly, a bag of crap. Which is what the defense looks like. I don't know if it's poor scheming on Spagnuolo's part, or the defenses or defensive players outside of maybe Jason Pierre-Paul have flat out given up. Now JPP, I will give credit where credit is due, has actually looked good so far this year from what I've seen. He's at least playing hard, or he's attempting to play hard. The rest of the defense has flat out given up on Steve Spagnuolo and head coach Ben McAdoo, who I do not see having a job next year. I really don't. The Giants haven't fired a guy since the early 80s when they gave up on a coach after 0-7.
Yeah, and here's what Dan has to say because about Ben McAdoo. McAdoo, what the hell's wrong with me?
Yeah, Ben McAdoo.
Yeah. Giants are entertaining as hell as they decide to keep the greatest NFL coach in modern time in Ben McAdoo. His gift of life is healing the world, and his haircut is inspiring a new trend, the Wolf Stenson trend. Giants are a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what analysis was that about,
Wolf
Dan.
Wolf Stanton?
But
Wolf the Dentist Stanton. You ever see D2, the second Mighty Ducks movie?
I know who he looks like. I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Still, it's like, well, Dan, thanks for throwing that out to us.
And this is Steve Stotts and the Giants. The Giants just need to keep doing what they are doing, which is embarrassing themselves and the fans week after week. At one win, the Giants could be in position to get a top two pick by season's end, guaranteeing them a chance at drafting one of the highly touted quarterbacks having underwhelming seasons. Also, the only reason why I believe Ben McAdoo is still their head coach is because the Giants must believe if they switch coaches now, they could win games. He truly is the dumbest coach in the NFL. Did you hear his stunning postgame this other week when he was asked what he said to the team at halftime? All he did was say, and then dead silence. He makes Jason Garrett look like Vince Lombardi. Truly a remarkable feat. And that's true, because I've heard a lot of the jokes that have been made at McAdoo's expense. At Ben McAdoo's expense is that all they're saying is, because that's really all the answers he had.
Yep, there's really nothing going on in that wagon of Giants football.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad and pathetic, really.
You know what's also sad?
What?
I don't say sad, but maybe sad because Tyrod Taylor, because now he's not going to be playing next week. He's not going to be the starting quarterback for their next game.
Well, that's kind of what happens when you get lambasted, when Buffalo gets lambasted 47-10 by the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
I mean, Tyrod Taylor
did a very bad job.
He's a decent quarterback, but maybe the other guys...
It seems like they've given up on him. And still, the Bills are in the sixth wild card spot.
Which is amazing in and of itself.
Yes. And it just doesn't really look good for him. I mean, his last game, his quarterback rating was a 33.6. He had no touchdowns. He had a pick. Only completed 50% of his throws for 56 yards. It just wasn't good, and the Bills were looking high and mighty, 5-3, but after these two losses, one to the Jets and this one to the Saints, it seems like the Bills are in panic mode now.
Nathan Peterman's going to be the starting quarterback for Buffalo this Sunday. Is that bad? It's damn sure not good.
Yes.
And now, for something else related to the NFL, Ezekiel Elliott will finally sit out the 6-game suspension after
what
has got to be...
That circus is over, finally.
I know. He's finally decided to repeal... Or whatever the hell you want to call it, I think it is repeal. His appeal of the suspension, he's going to finally sit out the 6 games. And you know what? I think this would have been smarter for Zeke to finally do this if he had just done it at the start of the year. Again, I think this was what the reason he even appealed it in the first place was because some felt that this might have been an abuse of power on Roger Goodell's part, which to a degree they have an argument it was an abuse of power on Goodell's part.
Well, I mean, they did give him the right to use that power.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. So the Players Association is just as dumb as Goodell is for giving Goodell all that power to begin with. So this is just as much on the players as it is on Goodell's stupidity.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but it is. But it took Zeke long enough. He's finally going to sit out the 6 games. It's not like it was going to matter anyway. The Eagles have pretty much run away with the division at this point.
Right now, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's sad, but it is what it is.
Yeah, with a 3-game lead.
I know, and I just had another thought on the air. Oh, yeah. So I mentioned this before. GQ Magazine gave out the award for Citizen of the Year, and this year's winner was Colin Kaepernick.
Ooh.
Kaepernick won Citizen of the Year.
His last award as a professional person.
Yeah. According to GQ Magazine, some people took to social media to vent over it, how they thought it should have gone to J.J. Watt, and to a degree they have an argument because J.J. Watt raised over $37 million for hurricane relief efforts down in Houston. And that's... J.J. Watt doesn't get enough credit for that. Good on J.J. Watt for being able to do that. But at the same time, it's like... Somebody else posted a video that made a compelling argument for what Colin Kaepernick did as to why he should be nominated for Citizen of the Year, and that is he brought to light a subject that most of us wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, exactly. And used his American right, free speech, to showcase a protest.
Now, granted, it may have cost him his professional football career, but he's doing what he believed is
basically
right.
Basically, he's like a pariah now.
Pretty
martyr.
Much.
And hopefully it's going to lead. I know several owners have done a lot of things to make it better, you know, for the community and more awareness and stuff like that. I don't remember exactly. I just know like the owners in Detroit are now working with the police or just working with the community to help out and make make it understanding and stuff like that. I know I'm just babbling right now.
I know.
But I just know that there's areas around the league that are trying to help out now because of this protest and what it's leading to. I'm glad that this protest has shifted back, or the discussion has shifted back to what its original message is, which is about the whole police brutality issue that we see every now and then with all the with the bad eggs of cops that's been going on in these communities. Of course, there are some good, everyone knows there's good cops, but also you got to bring to light all the bad cops that have been causing harm to the communities that don't deserve that, when they have their own hard times to deal with and don't want this extra garbage on their plate known as bad cops.
And it's giving them another form to say, you know what? We matter just as much as everybody else, and not all cops are bad guys. Let's clarify that. I'm reiterating it. You're right. Not all cops are bad cops. This is a way of saying, you know what? There are bad cops in the world, and somebody's got to stand up for the people who've been involved with these police officers, and something needs to get done about it. Kaepernick had the form, and he took it and ran with it.
Yeah, I think it's because all these other people that are complaining that it's about the military and stuff, they're complaining about some other things that are going on in Alabama. So it's like, I guess we're back to what the original protest was about here in the NFL. But the NFL has their own other problems.
Yes, they do. And how much time do we have left before we get into Pigskin Picks?
I think we got enough time.
All right, so then there's something else, Danny. This is completely unrelated to the NFL, but it is worth talking about. It is a good sports topic. Danny brought this up to my attention a few minutes ago.
Oh, he told you to? Dan told you to?
What?
About this day in history?
Yes, he did.
That's, I was going to say that's after Pigskin Picks.
All right, fine. We'll do that later.
Yeah, we got to tease this.
Yeah.
Tease us to the end.
Yeah, today is one of the greatest comebacks in sports history. What is it? We'll tell you right after Pigskin Picks. Let's get into
that. No, we don't. We have several time. We have enough time. Don't worry.
All right. So we'll get into that later.
Yeah. It's like a last mention.
Right. We want to stick with actual NBA discussion, surprisingly. And this I did want to get into. It's comments made by LeBron James the other night when the Cavs were here to play the Knicks. Did you hear about this at all?
Which comment? Which comment are you talking about?
The thing with KP and the thing with the guy that was drafted after Porzingis.
Okay.
Or not so Porzingis, Frank Ntilikina.
Yes. Okay, yeah, I remember hearing the great one of basketball,
I was gonna
the
say,
king, about what he said with Phil Jackson's picks.
All right, so this was before a 104-101 win by the Cavs over the Knicks at the Garden in what was a fairly entertaining basketball game. I did catch most of it.
I know the Knicks had the lead most of the way. And
couldn't hold it late, unfortunately.
Yeah, couldn't hold it and show that they're still a young team that needs to learn to win. So what did he say, Matt?
All right, so most people know by now that Frank Ntilikina was taken in the NBA draft. He was picked fourth overall by the Knicks. I'm just double-checking my facts here before I just completely go off. So, Ntilikina was taken eighth overall in the pick.
Yeah, you're thinking about Porzingis being taken fourth.
Right, so I'm just double-checking my facts before I really go off. All right, so this was mostly a shot at Phil Jackson, not at Frank Ntilikina. So basically what LeBron said was he was more upset by the fact that the Knicks didn't take Dennis Smith Jr., who was a point guard out of NC State. Dennis Smith ended up going the next pick at 9 to the Dallas Mavericks. LeBron was more upset about that the Knicks didn't get him, than they did Frank Ntilikina.
Stop worrying about other teams.
Yeah, well, no. It wasn't so much a shot at Ntilikina. LeBron's got props for... He said he had props for Ntilikina. It was more bashing Phil Jackson for what Phil's done to this Knicks organization.
Don't worry about the Knicks' issues. Worry about your own issues in Cleveland.
Yeah, and worry about the fact that you're still under 500 and you're missing the playoffs right now.
Okay, so that's right now with 1 month into the NBA season. Okay, you know, there's still 5 more months of this, Matt.
And not only that, but the fact that Isaiah Thomas hasn't played a game yet because he's
there's
been
hurt. Still 5 more months of this, Matt.
No, I know. I'm like, what the hell am I comparing? I don't care what Cleveland does. They're going to be back in the finals anyway.
Cry me a river when it's like 3 months left.
Yeah, trust me, I ain't crying you. You really think I give a crap?
I'm saying in general terms.
I'm
saying in general terms.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to cry that the fact that as of this recording, the Cavs are now 7-7 and 5.5 out over the top spot.
So they're not even under 500, man.
No, they're back at 500. They're 7-7.
Okay.
It's not really going to matter anyway. The Cavs will be back in the Eastern Conference Finals. They'll probably end up playing Boston, who's got the best record in the league, at 13-2.
But I'm glad that the Knicks showed some fire and spunk against the Cavaliers when they came to the Garden. You know, their players, Enes has been a nice lightning rod of a player. Like, he has some deficiencies, I know. But, like, you know, standing up for Porzingis, standing up for
Neil
Frank.
Kina.
Yep. And, you know, and just this team is slowly gelling together. The youth is really molding into something that can be very special. You could see potential finally here that we couldn't have seen over the past 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, there's been
of Knicks basketball.
There's been, like, blips on the screen from, like, the turn of the century to now. It was the second, the division title and the win over the Celtics a couple years ago in the playoffs. It was Melo's big hurrah with the Knicks. But now...
What?
Yeah, you heard what I said. They lost to the Pacers a couple years ago in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I heard Celtics. I'm like, what?
Yeah, no, they beat the Celtics in the first round that year.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, they beat Boston in the first round that year. But now, after the loss to Cleveland on Monday, they're 7-6 as of this recording. They're playing Utah tonight. And that game will be over by the time the show makes air in a couple of days.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're playing this well, they're getting contributions out of Porzingis, who dropped 34 against Sacramento a couple nights ago. Tim Hardaway Jr., and I said this when I finally posted the season predictions, which you can read on the blog, solid, ssonsports.blogspot.com. And that the Knicks, I think, overpaid for Tim Hardaway Jr., but the fact that they've got everybody going and they've all bought into the system now and they're not trying to run this stupid triangle, which I've hated since day one.
Yeah, I know. Hornacek can finally coach a team.
Exactly. Instead, they have a coach that actually, gasp, sits on the bench and doesn't try to run it from the press box. Holy shnikes. It's a novel concept and it's actually working. Damn, who knew that would work, right?
Yeah.
It's a great concept.
Great concept when the coach can actually scheme well.
And he can actually run his team and run a proper system that works within the players that he has.
A system that players want to play in this year.
Yeah, and it works.
Not in the 90s, but now.
Yeah.
Ooh, who knew?
And it works with the talent that you actually have available to you on the court because, I don't know, your cap situation screwed up because James Dolan practically ran his team into the ground from what I've heard.
Well, I guess you could say that. But, you know, there's a whole lot of other factors. I mean, he did have Isaiah Thomas, the Detroit Pistons.
The devil, Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, the devil running the team and really doing some bad decision-making.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, we know that James Dolan wanted Carmelo. And, yeah, I mean, the Knicks did, you know, okay. Unfortunately, there was just bad other decisions and stuff like that really screwed the Knicks over. And, you know, Dolan's doing what is the best thing, is just let the basketball people run basketball.
Yeah, which I think was also the smartest decision he ever made when he was running, when he had controlling interest over the New York Rangers. He knew first and foremost that, hey, I don't know anything about hockey. I'm going to let my hockey people run the New York Rangers.
You know, you live and grow and realize that, you know, running a basketball team is not for you.
No, it's not. And he should hopefully realize that. And maybe, just maybe, there's a brilliant chance that the Knicks could finally hit the level of the New York Rangers as far as being a competitive team is concerned. And the Rangers have managed to climb themselves back into contention. They're tied with points with the Islanders right now at 20. Although
Yippee.
The Islanders hold the wild card spot at the moment. The playoffs
Yippee.
Were to end now, the Islanders...
No one cares because it's already mid-November.
I know.
Don't even say it.
Fine, the Devils are in first place.
Good for them.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm looking at this number. 11-4-2 for the Devils to start the season.
I'm even more impressed now.
Yeah. And they are officially a point up on the 11-7-1 Pittsburgh Penguins, which you figured the Penguins would be there.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Whatever. They still love hockey. I'm glad the Islanders are still staying competitive.
I'm
glad that this division is a very highly competitive
one. Oh, hell yeah.
One.
And, oh, by the way, no Nikolai Kuhlman for 6 months. He's out with surgery for an upper body injury. He got hurt against Edmonton a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, hey. They got Josh Hosang back up on the roster. Thank God.
Yeah, I was wondering why he was in the minors.
Yeah,
like, I was out of the know, and I didn't even know that. Yeah, I heard that he's being called up from the minor leagues. I'm like,
so you didn't even know he was in the minors?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like I didn't even know that. It's like, why would he be in the minors?
Well, no, I knew he was
in
the minors.
Did he need more extra seasoning?
Why? I mean,
maybe because they had the top six spots, and like they want him to develop as a top six player, and not. You know, do what they did to Nino Niederreiter all those years ago by just letting him be in the fourth line or third line and just shuffle him in.
Keep shuffling him like a yo-yo before finally dumping him in Minnesota where he's getting,
you know,
I don't know, proper playing time?
Yeah, so I feel like maybe they were just trying to give Hosang those minutes that he would need to develop into a top six player.
Well, now
that's probably my guess.
Well, I'd say the same thing, but now that Kuhlman's out, he's going to get the playing time. And look at what's happened with Matt Barzal. He's thrived in getting the playing time as a top six forward.
Good.
Him and Anthony, I think Beauvillier may miss a little bit of time because I know he got hurt over the weekend blocking shots.
All right, unfortunately, that's enough talk about hockey. We got to move on.
Yeah, so shall we pick football games?
Yeah, I know you try to fill some time, so.
Yeah, all right, let's do it. Let's pick football games. Here we go. This is Sully and Steve on Sports.
Pigskin Pick'em. Turn down for what?
So here we go. A recap, quick recap of Week 10 before we move on to our predictions. And the first one was Detroit beating on the Cleveland Browns as expected. 38-24, a point differential of 14. Now that was over what Matt and Steve predicted, since they predicted the Lions. Steve predicted a 9-point differential while Matt predicted 10, and that 10 was closest, so he wins that game.
Yay!
And now the next one is the Jacksonville hosting the LA Chargers, I should say, and Jacksonville close. And Jacksonville almost lost that one, 120-17. And Steve was the closest without going over by picking the Jacksonville Jaguars to win by 6 points. And now the third game was Jets at Tampa Bay, and we all know how that one went.
We screwed the pooch.
So no one won that one. Now these next two games is amazing on its own in terms of the Solid Steve Pigskin Pick'em predictions.
Why is that, Jeff?
Because this first game that I'm going to mention is the High Chief Snyder's hosting the Minnesota Vikings. And all you three hosts picked Minnesota. But the thing was that it was a 38-30 win by Minnesota. And Dan correctly predicted the Minnesota to win by 8 points.
All right. I'll give him that.
And the second one I'm going to mention is the San Francisco 49ers actually winning a game, as we talked earlier, 31-21 over the Giants. And Dan not only said that the 49ers are going to win, but they were going to win by 10 points. So two accurate back-to-back predictions by Dan to give him the lead in this week. So now it all comes down to the last game, the Carolina Panthers hosting the Dolphins on Monday Night Football. And boy, what do you know? Dan wanted a close game, but it certainly was not. It was a beatdown, 45-21 Carolina, and the point differential there went over all three hosts who picked Carolina, but Matt was the closest again by picking 10 points. That was the highest one out of three, so Matt got his second win to tie Dan for the week.
Which bailed me out. Thank you very much, Carolina.
So that means that with two first, since it was a tie, both Matt and Dan got 2 points for the first place tie, while Steve did not get a point for finishing in last. Steve stays in first place with 14 points, but Matt is now behind Steve by one, and Dan is creeping up by being behind Steve by 2 points.
So it's a 2-point differential between first and third, where this time last year I was widening the gap.
Yes.
All right, so week 11 we go. What do we have for this week's slate? Since the Jets are on the bye week, it's Giants and 5 randomizer?
Yes, 5 random teams.
All right.
The first one up, of course, is our New York Giant game as they host Kansas City. I'm going to first put you down as a win for New York Giants.
Actually, no.
I know. I'm going to put you down for Kansas City.
Yeah. Kansas City wins it by 2 touchdowns. They take a 14-point victory because the Giants flat-out suck, and KC's actually a good team. Kansas City by 14.
By 14 points, huh? So this one is going to be a wide margin of point differentials. Both Steve and Dan, they also predicted Kansas City. And do you want to take a guess as who had the higher prediction?
I'll say Danny took the higher pick.
He certainly did. He picked Kansas City to win by 21. Because this is also a Kansas City team that's coming off a bye week. And you know how the big challenge flag does against coming off the bye.
Yeah, they're usually pretty good. I don't think he's lost yet coming off the bye week.
I think he maybe lost once, but Andy Reid is a great coach off the bye.
Yes, he is.
Predicted them, the Kansas City Chiefs, to win by 7.
All right, so Steve's the only one who's got this game being in single digits for point differential. That being said, randomizer, please. Next game.
Turn down for what?
It is the return of two of our favorite teams who are head-to-head. The yes. Browns are hosting the Jacksonville Jaguars.
That had to make Danny so happy that both of them are in it this week and they're playing each other. Oh, that's great. I'm taking Jacksonville.
Of course you are.
Because the Browns flat out suck. Jags win it by 10.
All right. Now, Steve, he also picks Jacksonville. And he says that they are going to win by 9.
Okay. And Danny's picking Cleveland?
Here's the thing. For you, Matt, to win this game, you have to win it by 10.
Okay.
Because Dan predicts Jacksonville by 14. He even said to me, sorry, Browns.
He's picking against the Browns this week? Holy crap.
So the only way you can win, Matt, is if Jacksonville wins by 10.
Otherwise, I'm completely screwed.
Because
all right.
Steve picked by 9.
Yeah. So with that being said, next game.
Turn down for what?
And this one seems to be an easy game for you to predict who will win because it's Detroit at Chicago.
Let them pick first.
All
I'm
right.
I'm going to change it up a little. Let them make their first predictions.
So Steve, he predicts this is going to be a close game, as he says that Detroit will win by 3, while Dan thinks it's going to be a little bit more of an easier win for Detroit by a touchdown, 7 points.
I'm going a little bit higher than that, than Danny. I'm taking Detroit by 10. Because I think the Lions are the better balanced team, and yes, I'll give credit where it's due, Mitch Trubisky actually showed up and played pretty well last week against Green Bay, even though the Packers finally got a win with Brett Hundley at quarterback, their first win without Aaron Rodgers this year. And Trubisky played pretty well, but he's going up against another solid defense in Detroit, and Matthew Stafford is better than Brett Hundley. Detroit gets the win by 10. Next game.
Turn down for what?
It's the Monday night game for week 11. All the way in Seattle, the Hawks are hosting the Falcons.
Seahawks, Falcons, this one's going to be...
This one might have our good old wooden ship rise once again.
Yeah, I'm taking Seattle in this game.
Nope, no wooden ship this time.
Damn it! No, I went. If the game had been in Atlanta, I would have given the Falcons up a little bit more of a puncher's chance. But because Seattle is so incredibly tough to be able to beat at home...
Unless you play against Washington Redskins.
Right. Seattle wins it by a field goal.
And you're going to match Dan because he also predicts Seahawks to win by a field goal. Whereas Steve... He says they are going to win by 6. Clean sweep in terms of predictions, but not point differential.
I know we've had that with every game so far of the first 4.
I can't wait for Brendan to tweet out some, or not tweet, but
comment something
and I will delete it because it's stupid.
I can't wait for that. So, Jeff, next game.
Turn down for what?
Game number 4 on the randomizer, as our 5th overall game,
there we go,
is the return of these two teams from last week, the Rams and the Vikings in Minnesota.
I'm calling
this one is already diversity.
Yeah, I'm calling the upset.
Is it really upset because they're both pretty decent teams?
Yeah, well, according to the Vegas odds, at least on one side I'm reading, Minnesota's the favorite. I'm taking the Rams in this one.
You're taking the Rams.
I'm picking the Rams in this game. They two are coming on. I'm expecting a big week out of Todd Gurley. I'm expecting good things out of Jared Goff and Robert Wood, who had a fantastic week last week with over 170 yards receiving for the Rams. Rams win it by a touchdown.
There you go. Marking that down. Right. And we have here the other host. Do you want to take a guess as who picked who?
Steve picked Los Angeles. Danny picked Minnesota.
You got that completely wrong. Steve predicts Minnesota to barely win it by 2 points.
Safety, all right.
Well, does it have to be safety?
No, but that's the general consensus.
Imagine if the last play was a safety. Or at least the last scoring play.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Dan probably predicts a safe bet by predicting the Rams to win. This, though, by 6 points. So, Matt...
It's got to be a touchdown or more for me to win.
Yep.
All right, and final game, Jeff.
Turn down for what?
The High Chiefs Niners make their return again.
Wow.
As they head to New Orleans, or as everyone likes for me to say it as, Nolens.
High Chiefs Niners in New Orleans. High Chiefs Niners, you're going to have a bad time. New Orleans has won 7 straight.
So are you saying that they're going to have some bad news?
I'm afraid I've got some bad news. 8 straight wins for New Orleans. Saints take the game by 10.
Ooh, wow, that's a big one. even though you match Dan with 10 points again. You have two same predictions as Dan. Are you sure you want to go by 10?
I'll go 14.
All right.
So we know Danny's got Norman's by 10.
Yep, and Steve, just like both of you, he predicted New Orleans, and this, though, is a win by 7 points.
All right, so we have diversity on one game.
In terms of
who we're actually picking.
Who's winning, yeah.
Yeah, but we've got diversity a little bit on scores. With that being said, Jeff, shut this the hell down.
Turn down for what?
It's pretty tough, though, when you know, halfway through the season, who the contenders are and who are the complete garbage teams right now.
Pretty much.
So,
welcome to life in the NFL.
Yep, all the fun in the first few weeks has gone by, and now it's serious football, and it's not as fun predicting games.
No, it's
unless it's a top team matchup or a complete matchup where it's two horrible teams.
And especially now with teams starting to separate themselves, like with the hot streak that the Saints have been on, with how well Philly's played. New England being New England. And, oh, by the way, we teased this before. Let's get into it now. This date in sports history.
Oh, God.
21 years ago.
Is it really supposed to be a big, momentous time in sports history? I mean, for Dan, probably, because it was still during his developing youth.
21 years ago today, the greatest comeback in basketball history.
It's not the greatest
led
comeback.
Led by 44 points from Michael Jordan, going 22 of 22 from the floor.
Oh.
The Toon Squad had knocked off the Monstars.
Oh, God.
MJ and Bill Murray helped meet the comeback as the Toon Squad walked away with a 78-77 win over the Monstars. Jordan led the way with 44 points.
You said that already.
24 of which came by way of the dunk. Bugs Bunny had 10. Bill Murray had 2.
You're really looking at the box score?
Yeah, there's an actual box score.
There's an actual box score?
Right there. Just to get that out of the way. Yes, there's an actual box score online for this game.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, I should not be this dumbfounded, but I am.
It's great, isn't it?
No.
There's a box score for the friggin' Toon Squad game from Space Jam. I love it. And Space Jam 2 is due out, I think, before the end of 2020.
It's an actual movie, too. An actual sequel.
Yeah.
Oh, did Bill Murray have any points?
Bill Murray? Yeah, he had 2 points.
He had 2 points. It's on the box score? So, how many...
Actually, no, Bill Murray, no points. Sorry, no points for Bill Murray.
So, how many players for the Toon Squad actually played in this game?
Well, let's see. Bugs had 10, Lola had 8, 4 from Daffy, 4 from Taz, 2 from Porky, 2 from Pepe Le Pew, and Elmer Fudd. That accounted for the 78 points, 56 of which... were scored off of dunks.
With Michael Jordan's secret magic juice.
Yeah, which is really water, but it works all the same.
I like how they had to say secret magic juice.
Yep.
Thanks a lot,
it's
guys.
Special stuff. What'd you expect?
Special stuff.
It's MJ. He's the greatest of all time.
Special fluids.
Yeah. Well, he is his Royal Anders after all. You have to give him that.
Still, it's kind of a silly thing.
I know. But I will save you the misery of having to deal with this.
Yes, please.
We have now run out of time for this episode of the show. I'd like to remind everybody once again that you can follow us on various forms of social media. Facebook.com/SolidSteveOnSports. Twitter at @S_S_sports. Check out the sports blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. All the latest episodes of the show will be on iTunes. Everything else is on SoundCloud. Just search Sully and Steve on Sports. Hit download and you can take the show with you wherever you go. Will we have a show next week?
I hope so.
It's a work in progress because of busy schedules, but if not, I want to take this quick opportunity now to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving and a happy start to the holiday season. We will either have a Thanksgiving show for you, or we will talk to you again in early December. But for everybody working hard behind the scenes, for Third Mike, Dan, Steve, and Jeff, I'm Sally. We'll be back whenever we get around to it, hopefully by Thanksgiving next week. See ya.
Kick it, R. Kelly.
I believe I can fly. Woo. I believe I can touch.